And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Ho, ho, ho. A show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, reindeer, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Palomar.
And it is that time. It is that time of the year where we feature the best of. It's an entire year of great shows that we've done. Since the beginning of An Organic Conversation, actually, we are now getting close to 200 episodes.
Can you believe that?
Sometime in January, I think we will, or maybe mid-February next year, we will hit the 200th episode of An Organic Conversation. So, fantastic sleigh ride it has been. Thank you to our listeners. And this is the time of the holidays where traditionally, we always feature the best of. What was your favorite this year, Mark?
Are you talking about solstice?
About
what holiday are you celebrating, Helga?
Yeah, of course the solstice.
Okay, that's what I thought, because I remember the sleigh rides we used to do on December.
On winter solstice.
December
21st. So much to celebrate. Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
What were some of your favorite shows? We covered, really, from food to nonprofit work to authors. Francis Moore LaPay was on the show. We talked about volunteering, pet adoption. An incredible breadth and array of different fantastic guests that we had the pleasure to work with and feature here on An Organic Conversation.
Yeah, you know, for me, I was thinking about that when we were getting ready to do this show, and I thought we'd already decided the three that we wanted to do this time of year. But one that I go back to in the spring of last year was it's a show on listening with Susan Gillis Chapman, and it was just such an amazing show. She was a great guest. She has a great book, The 5 Keys to Mindful Communication. And what I really came away with that is I realized that I spend a lot of time already forming my answers before someone has even finished their conversation and not really ever listening to them. I've already come up with a solution to their problem, or I've already figured out, you know, what I'm going to say. And I left that show and I went, wow. And since then, I've been working really hard at just quieting my brain when someone's talking to me so that I can actually hear what they're saying.
And the message, instead of preparing an answer, was some people often, actually, most of us often just want to be listened to, right? That was really the take-home message. Sita, how about you?
You know, I think what may have been the most powerful thing I learned this year from our guests was during our volunteering show, which wasn't that long ago, but we had Carl Robillard on, and he said that the time of year or the day of the year where they need the most volunteering support to help serve people who are getting food at shelters around the world, around the country, is actually not the holidays, which was what my assumption was, and when many people volunteer for that reason, but actually on days like Memorial Day and Labor Day and Veterans Day, because those are long weekends and most people go out of town, and they run short on hands and hearts to help serve. So it really changed the way I want to give my time, I want to give my time.
Fantastic show.
What about for you, Helga? You've had 200 conversations over the year, more than 50 this year. What really sticks out for you?
Well, recently we had a show on biomimicry, and I know the whole An Organic Conversation, the whole conversation we have every week is about reverence and reverence to the natural world and how it informs our beingness here on this planet. And biomimicry, you know, I have the utmost respect and awe for nature, but that show with Janine Benyus, who's really one of the leaders in terms of biomimicry and applying biomimicry, looking at nature and looking at millions of years in the works of refining processes and refining, you know, the petals on a flower for optimal solar design. How can we use nature's wisdom and apply it to our daily solutions or challenges? Because literally we are shown, everything is communicated, we are shown every single second of every single day by nature of how to do it right. And we just, you know, as Mark said, right back to Mark, we don't really listen. So we already have an answer, right? We take a quick peek and then we run with it instead of really understanding what ecology holds and what biomimicry allows us to do. Fascinating show. So this is a time where us three hosts, pick our one favorite to re-air, kind of the best of An Organic Conversation. And today, ta-ta, is the first day of that. In the next 3 weeks, we'll feature the three best shows that we picked, or best shows is kind of the three shows we individually picked to be featured again. And Mark, today is your day. What did you pick? Isn't that fun?
Well, it is. It is so fun. And it was a very difficult decision because I really enjoyed so many shows this year. But I had to settle on Baking, a show that we did again last...
Why am I not surprised?
Last spring. You know, because for me, you know, besides garlic cooking in the kitchen, there's nothing sexier than something baked coming out of the oven. I mean, it really just is one of those things that can change your whole mood when you smell a loaf of bread or a pie or some cookies coming out of the oven. And it really can change the whole atmosphere of a house. And Casey Coletti, who was the...
Yes, she's the
culinary curriculum.
Cita, you have it down.
Yes, culinary curriculum manager at Bowman College, which basically means she develops all of the incredible recipes and the entire curriculum that educates natural chefs. So when it comes to natural
at Bowman College, that's bowmancollege.org. Fantastic culinary arts and holistic health college.
When it comes to holistic baking, yes. I don't think there's anybody in the country who does it better than Casey Coletti.
And thank you for that save there. and really, Casey created such an invitation because this is such a fearful place. People will go, they'll saute, they'll roast something, they'll roast vegetables in the oven. But then you say, oh, will you bake something? And they're like, oh, okay, let me pull out my recipe and my measuring cups and I don't want to make a mistake. And she made it so easy.
Well, and not just baking, but particularly baking with alternative ingredients.
Right, right.
She did a lot of conversation about gluten-free baking. And for most people, they're like, okay, how the heck is this going to bind or rise? So, yeah, definitely illuminating that world.
That show originally aired on April 28th of this year. It's Mark Mulcahy's favorite pick for these 3 weeks of holiday seasons. Happy holidays from all of us. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm the bakery master.
Mark Mulcahy, that is.
Mark Mulcahy, and I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And yes, we're inviting you now to listen to a re-airing of Flour, Sugar, Fat, Holistic Baking Alternatives with Bowman College Culinary Curriculum Manager Casey Coletti. Happy holidays to all of you. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic is flour, sugar, fat, holistic baking at its best. One of my fondest childhood memories is walking into the Backstube early in the morning. Backstube literally means small baking room. It's all very literal in Germany. Picture a tiny 200 square foot room covered with flour everywhere, perfectly warmed by an open oven, with a Bäckermeister, the baking master, and his assistant, exhausted but happy and up since 2 a.m., proudly loading a rack filled to the brim with freshly baked breads and croissants, Berliners, Laugenbrezeln, and whatever else the German baking master would offer that day. I remember that on a cold day, the bread fresh out of the oven would warm my fingers all the way home. For many of us, baking is home. So as an alternative to wheat flour and highly sugared treats, we wanted to open up the world of holistic baking today and talk about how to bake with the healthiest ingredients possible so you can make perfect, delicious, health-conscious treats at home. Mm-hmm. With us in the studio is Chef Casey Coletti, the Culinary Curriculum Manager at Bowman College. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, wonderful for you to join us today.
And Casey, yeah, welcome. It's been a few weeks since we last saw each other. Tell us about your background, and then, you know, how has your love of baking evolved with all these different ingredients that are out there now?
Well, really, my love of baking started when I was just a child. The kitchen was always the place to be, and I knew that something magical happened there. I would follow my mom into the kitchen and watch her throwing things together. It began with boxed mixes and simple chocolate chip cookies, but I'd always add a little something extra and get kind of creative with it. Became one of my favorite things. And everybody loves treats. They always bring joy. So baking has evolved as kind of a creative artwork and also an expression of love.
Mm-hmm. And so I know hearing what you're saying, one of my favorite things, if I walk into a kitchen and there's a pot pie there, I love pie.
Food for that matter. Yeah, well, as long as there's food in the kitchen.
But there is something so comforting to me that to smell something coming out of the oven, like Helga was saying mm-hmm. in his original story, is that whole. So I completely get what mm-hmm. you're talking about with your mom. And so, what about all you know? And how so? How has your baking evolved?
Well, it's like I said, it started out really simple and sugary, and then as my awareness grew, I went to Bowman College and I studied at the Natural Chef program, and I learned a little bit more about health. I had a couple of friends who developed gluten intolerance, dairy intolerance, different things like that, and they couldn't eat the treats anymore. And you'd be at a celebration, and they would be standing off to the side, and I was like, those are the people I want to learn how to bake for. And so I did. I just went home and started experimenting. I started learning about health and nutrition and about the different ingredients, and I really, my kitchen became my laboratory.
And Bauman College, on that note, of course, is a beloved underwriter of the show. It's a culinary art institute and where you can study holistic nutrition and the culinary arts. Zita, does that sum it up well?
Yeah, pretty good summary. Yeah, nutrition certification and culinary arts in the health supportive tradition. And Casey, something that I think that's really great about her background is that she has done traditional baking too. So you worked for Brown Sugar Bakery under Tanya Holland?
I did. The Brown Sugar Kitchen is a soul food restaurant over in West Oakland, and I was their pastry chef for a while. I've definitely dabbled in the more traditional baked goods as well as the alternative world.
I think that's what makes her baked goods so, so good.
Yes, and we are sitting here in the studio with several torts and cupcakes or muffins, I guess. Are those muffins?
They could be either one.
We'll, we'll get into that in a minute. But Casey, what is meant by holistic baking? There are different approaches to baking. What do you incorporate that makes your baked goods so different than, you know, the average, as you mentioned, sugar, white flour, kind of, not that that's not delicious, but many of us can't or don't want to eat that way and still enjoy kind of a sweet treat. What's your approach to it?
That's a great question. I think the real standout difference between the baked goods that I make and some that you might find in the store is that my baked goods use real whole foods ingredients. So I would use nuts and fruits and vegetables and whole grains and things like that. So you're not going to find refined sugars and refined flours and processed foods in my baked goods.
And Casey, did you find that your experience at the bakery before and growing up, when you started experimenting with this, because you had some baking background, did that help in this endeavor? Because I think some people are a little bit shy about switching an ingredient mm-hmm. or something like that. And baking really is a lot about math, right, when it comes down to it?
Yeah, there is certainly an element of science and alchemy when it comes mm-hmm. to baking. I like to use the metaphor of the rodeo horse. It's like first you learn the craft, and then you get to play around with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have gotten a lot of training. I've worked in bakeries in college and afterwards and restaurants and things like that. But I will also say, you know, gluten-free baking and alternative baking is really a newer field. And it doesn't hurt to just go in your kitchen and experiment. Mm-hmm. It's about your tastes. It's about your body, about what works for you. So go in there and play around. Mm-hmm.
Cool. A pioneer in the new world of holistic baking. Casey, what do you think makes holistic baking a better alternative than traditional baking, other than the allergens, which we talked about? Like, what are the benefits of baking and eating this way?
Well, I think one of the main differences is it doesn't take a whole lot of one of my baked goods to feel satisfied. We're talking about whole foods ingredients, good quality fats, proteins, things that aren't going to spike your blood sugar. They're not going to cause weight gain. things that really you can eat them and feel good on an emotional level, but also on a physical level.
So when Helga goes to reach for another piece of that cake, he really doesn't need it. He just wants it.
Right? But it won't make him feel bad.
I'm looking at the remainder, actually, at this point, the remainder of what I've learned is a hazelnut chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Hazelnut flour based chocolate cake for with three candles on top.
What's the occasion?
Yeah, what's the occasion?
What's the occasion? Well, for those of you that have been following an organic conversation, we are celebrating right around this time of year the third anniversary of AOC being on the air.
Yes,
so we're celebrating.
The first show was in 2009, May 3rd, 2009. And I remember crazily nervous reading everything off the page alone. Mark hadn't even joined yet. Look how far we've come. But I'm looking at the remainder of something that's already gobbled up because it was so delicious, of a hazelnut tort. You mentioned earlier alternative flours. There's not even grains, any kind of grain in there, right?
No grains at all.
And I feel not just satisfied, it feels like real food, actually, as if I really ate a meal.
It is real food.
Well, and when Helga's saying that, I think we've all been programmed, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great, but what about a real cake? What about real this or real that? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the interesting mindset, because it's like, it's almost as if we're not doing something in the real world when we cook with alternative ingredients, yet it's the furthest thing from the truth. It's actually probably closer to...
I think you touch on something really important. I think it's coming back to what is real and coming back to what food is. It's our connection with food and things that are processed and stripped and that your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. Like, what makes that any more real than something that is made out of farm-fresh eggs and ground nuts?
Yes, you're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we're talking about holistic baking today with our in-studio guest, Casey Caletti, Chef Casey. And we want to dive into the world of alternative ingredients and alternative baking, flour, sweeteners, fat, everything that you can substitute for the average sugar and white flour when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned for so much more.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
At Testa Epicure Skilled, we provide tea and coffee from the regions of the world known to produce the finest of their kind. Always certified organic and fair trade, we stand for exceptional taste and highest quality. Every cup of our tea and coffee is connected to the soil and the people working the land. We have searched the world for the best ingredients and invite you to enjoy Testa tea and coffee. Find Desta at your natural food store or online at Desta.com. That is D-E-S-T-A.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is flour, sugar, fat, holistic baking at its best, as we are diving into the world of alternatives to white flour and sugar with our guest here in the studio, Chef Casey Caletti. And that website is Chef Casey, that's K-A-S-E-Y.com. Before we get into the world of alternatives of flour and sweeteners, and of course fat, we will look at the world of produce this week, of what's going on the produce dock and in the retail world, with our very own Mark Mulcahy. Mark, what's in season?
Today we're talking about something that is considered a vegetable, but is mostly used in fruit when you're cooking it or baking with it. And today on the line is the voice of the market, Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce in San Francisco. Earl, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, Mark, and it's something you only see for a short period of time, and we're talking rhubarb, aren't we?
That's right. We're talking rhubarb.
Hey, Earl.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hi, Earl.
We're great.
Great to hear from you.
Tell us about the rhubarb. How's the season for rhubarb?
Well, you know, we're right in the middle of it, and it's not a long season, and that's one of the great things for me is that you get to revisit these growers and that you haven't talked to in about 8 months, because the rhubarb season is really a spring mild weather crop. So you start seeing it, at least out in the West Coast, but you also see it pretty much anywhere north of like northern Ohio. So that's about 45 degrees in terms of latitude. So upstate New York on the East Coast north, and here Washington and Oregon.
Oh,
you're only going to see it pretty much late April through maybe June, July, and sometimes you can get two crops out of it.
Oh, well, Earl, as always a pleasure. Thank you for being on. We look forward to talking to you next week. When you're looking for rhubarb, it can be deep crimson or even kind of a pinky color, sometimes even streaked green. And you're looking for medium-sized stalks that are firm and really blemish-free, because sometimes you see they have some brown spots on them, or they can be a little shrivelly. That's a sign of age, and so you want to just stay away from that. And so rhubarb is very stringy. And to get an idea, if you haven't had it before, it's kind of like celery, how you can pull those strings out of celery. And you don't need to de-string it, because rhubarb is mostly used cooked. And Earl was asked, Helga was asking if we should worry about eating the flowers or the leaves of rhubarb. The leaves of rhubarb are considered to be poisonous, but you have to eat quite a bit. But even just a little bit could give you a stomach ache. And so, they tell you to just stay away from the leaves, but the stalk is fine. And once you get your rhubarb home, after you've picked a nice firm stalk, you want to wrap it tightly in plastic, and you can put it in the fridge. And don't wash it until you use it, because it'll start to break down. And in your refrigerator, it'll keep up for about a week. And if you're one of those people that just can't get enough of this firm rhubarb stalk, it's really easy to freeze. And what you do is you just wash it and cut it into about 1-inch pieces. And then you drop the pieces into boiling water for a minute. And then you take it out of the boiling water and you shock it by putting in cold ice cold water with ice cubes in it. And then you drain the rhubarb pieces and spread them out on baking sheets and transfer them to the freezer. And then once it's frozen solid, it can store in the freezer for about a year, and then you can use it for baking and cooking and probably some of the other great recipes that Sita's going to tell us about. And if you really can't get enough of rhubarb, this amazing thing that's only around for a month or so, you can go to the 21st Annual Rhubarb Festival, which is in Alito, Illinois, on June 1st this year. So, Helga, you know, instead of waiting to go to Germany.
Instead of flying to Germany, fly to Illinois for the rhubarb festival.
Wow, rhubarb, chill hours. Who knew? That's amazing. This little six-week vegetable. Thank you. That was
Thank you, Mark.
In season with Mark Mulcahy. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani.
What would be the German name for a rhubarbist?
That's a good question. I'll need to think about that. I'm so right now somewhere else. But yeah, what's the German word for rhubarb? Email us today, right now. Today's topic is flour, sugar, fat, holistic baking at its best. For many of us, baking is home. So as an alternative to wheat flour and highly sugared treats, this hour is dedicated to talk about the baking with healthiest ingredients so that you can make perfect, delicious, health-conscious treats at home. Still with us here in the studio is Chef Casey Caletti. That website is chefcasey.com from Bauman College. She's the curriculum manager at Bauman College, one of the leading holistic nutrition and culinary arts institutes in the country. And Casey, guide us through the world of baking alternatives. We learned before the break that it can be as delicious. It's actually more satisfying, if not more delicious. It's real food. What are the basic staples that you will always need for holistic baking and for any baking, really, for that matter?
Well, there are some key ingredients in baking, several key components. Most baked goods have some form of fat, whether it's an oil or a nut-based fat or eggs. There is also kind of the base, different flours often used as a base. Sometimes produce is incorporated in that. Most baked goods have leaveners. Whether that's baking soda, baking powder, or something a little bit more natural like maybe eggs, it can act as a leavener. And a sweetener is common. I mean, even savory goods oftentimes will have a little pinch of sweetener to balance flavor. There are different ways and different, you know, amounts that people like to include sweeteners.
And interestingly enough, you mentioned during the break that it's not quite as structured in holistic or alternative baking because some of the flours that you may use have a certain fat content that almost eliminate or completely eliminate the need for any additional fat, right? For example, nuts. Let's start with that. Let's start with the base flour. You need some kind of paste, obviously, that will make the cake, right? What are the alternatives that you use in holistic baking?
Well, like you mentioned, one of my favorites is to use a nut flour. So you can make your own almond meal or almond flour. Oftentimes what I'll do is I'll put almonds in boiling water for just a moment and then slip off the skins, process them in my food processor. That way it gives you a lot of control over the texture. You can have finely ground or a little bit more gritty. You could mix up some of each.
And will that make a difference in the end result?
It definitely does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a different mouthfeel.
Oh, gotcha. Oh.
So if you have a really finely ground almond, you're going to get a slightly denser, more... a cake that might resemble something closer to a wheat flour cake in texture, in grain.
If it's finer. A finer grain, okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you keep it chunkier, you actually have a rougher muffin type.
Yeah, it's a little bit more rustic. Yeah, so it just depends on your preference. Almonds are a great tried and true classic in terms of nut flours. Hazelnuts are also really great, like the cake that I brought in today. They have a nice rich flavor. Those are probably my two favorites.
Do you use them raw and then cook them, or do you use toasted hazelnuts, for example, and then grind them up?
You know, I generally choose raw nuts and then grind them. But if you were going for a particular flavor, you could certainly toast your nuts.
And could a nut have too much fat? I mean, because I know there's varying degrees of fat in nuts, right, and protein.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. In my experience, nuts like macadamia that are particularly oily, it's hard to grind them into flour without getting macadamia nut butter.
Well, then you just have to eat that, right?
And then you use it in your ganache, right?
Yeah. You could.
It becomes the topping.
I actually have a cookie recipe that does require nut butter. It's a great way to use it.
Oh, okay.
It's a very simple recipe. Uh-huh.
So almond and hazelnuts as kind of the classic nuts you can use. Mm-hmm. You use them raw. You grind them up at home. What are there other nuts? Or what's the next favorite paste base?
My next favorite base would be coconut flour. It's not exactly a nut, and it's not exactly a flour. It's somewhere in between. So after coconut milk is extracted, they take the pulp and they grind it up and dry it out, and it makes a really high fiber flour. It's pretty incredible. It's very high fiber, so
sounds so delicious.
It is
unbelievable.
Some people takes a little bit of getting used to, and it's kind of tricky to bake with. Generally speaking, you would use a much smaller amount of coconut flour than you would something like wheat flour or all-purpose flour.
And you would need to make it yourself, or can you find coconut flour?
No, you can buy it. There are many different brands. Bob's Red Mill has a brand. Tropical Traditions has a brand. Most of your Whole Foods and alternative grocery stores will carry it. And you can also order it online.
Did that even exist? I mean, coconut flour, did that even exist 10 years ago?
Isn't that wild?
Yes, it did, Mark.
No. Oh my God.
I've been in the natural foods business for 30 years.
It's incredible.
And I don't think I've ever heard of that. And when we started talking about it, I was going, coconut flour? Really?
Well, the cupcakes that I brought in here are made with coconut flour, so you'll get a chance to taste them firsthand.
It might be time to pass those out now. Before we move off of coconut. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Casey. Sorry, I didn't want to leave coconut flour too soon.
Oh, no, we can't leave it too soon. It's pretty incredible. So generally speaking, when you bake with coconut flour, you want to use about 6 eggs for every cup of coconut flour.
Oh, that's quite a bit more, right?
It's quite a bit more eggs. And in general, you won't use a whole cup of coconut flour. You're talking in much smaller quantities. So an entire 9-inch cake might use 3/4 of a cup.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Because it's so flaky that without the binder of the egg, it would fall apart. Is that the main reason?
It's also very dense. Coconut flour makes almost like a pound cake type texture. Oh. It's very rich and very sweet. It's perfect for desserts.
So if you were a vegan and you don't want to cook with bake with eggs, is there an alternative as a vegan binder, or would you not use coconut flour?
You know, generally speaking, there are all kinds of great alternatives for eggs, but with coconut flour, I think you're going to have to mix another flour in there to lighten it up if you're not going to use the eggs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lighten it up. What would you use as an alternative or to mix in? Like, what's the next phase? We have nuts, we have the coconut flour. Mm-hmm. What else is out there?
Well, one of my other staples is called arrowroot, and it is actually a root, and it's a starch in baking. So it adds a really nice texture to your baked goods. It's going to lighten things up a little bit. You can imagine comparing it to something like cornstarch, except arrowroot it's not GMO. It's much more digestible, much less processed. So it's a great alternative for people. And I always slip a little bit into my baked goods, into my flour
blends. That's what it is.
That's my secret.
What you see a lot in like, you know, larger companies that make a lot of wheat-free alternatives, the first thing is usually rice flour. Do you ever cook with rice flour? Is that a fair flour that behaves well
fair
in the
flour.
Fair flour?
An unfair flour?
No, like does it behave well? What are the properties? Is that a good thing to use?
Well, that's a great question. I think when gluten-free baking was really making its first start, rice flour was the most common, and oftentimes people would just straight substitute rice flour, but it kind of gave gluten-free baking a bad name because rice flour can be crumbly and kind of grainy. You can get a certain kind of grit mouthfeel, and there are different varieties. White rice flour is going to be a lot starchier. You're going to get a bit of a gummy baked good. I prefer brown rice flour. It's more of a whole food, I use it in blends, so I won't use just rice flour. I'll blend it with something else, but as one of the starchier flours, it does help the texture.
How can you possibly learn of how those pastes behave? Like, if somebody has never worked with hazelnuts, how would you know what to do and how to do it so that the final result, like heat-wise, all that, right? More temperature, longer, like, how do you learn that?
Well, I think one of the things that really distinguishes baking from savory cooking is that oftentimes it's an act of faith. You mix it all together and you just have to bake it and try it. And if it doesn't turn out, you invite your friends over, you put some chocolate on top.
That's what you do, Mark, right? Mike, that's what you do.
Yeah. But really, it takes practice. It takes practice and it takes knowing your ingredients, you know,
And the sense of adventure, too.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you have recipes on your site?
I do. That? And Sita, you were absolutely correct. It is an adventure because, you know, all of these things you practice and you try and you never know. And sometimes something turns out amazing or not how you thought. But you can check out my recipes on Casey's Culinary Adventures.
Well, and Casey, I have never been afraid to experiment in the kitchen. I mean,
that's great.
I will throw anything. You know, it's like I was one of those people, and maybe you were the same way growing up, where I could look in the fridge, there'd be three ingredients, and I could create something from it. So that's just my natural thing. And yet, baking, and I don't think I'm alone here, has always been like, I don't want to just throw some onions in there. I don't want to just change this flour out because I'm not so sure. And do you find, like, when you're teaching and things, that people are a little maybe apprehensive about? They're not so, they might be adventurous, culinarily adventurous, but they're not, they get a little shyer around baking?
I do find that to be true. And I think partly is because you can't correct as you go as easily with baking. You have to put it in the oven and surrender.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I love that.
But as you get practice and as you try it out, you'll learn.
Just gotta let go.
You do. You really have to let go.
It's the practice of letting go.
Which is amazing because bakers have a reputation for being very type A, but we do a lot of surrendering in the kitchen.
Yes.
So that's where it occurs.
We're talking with Chef Casey Caletti, the culinary curriculum manager at Bowman College here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Volkehi.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
As we are diving into and exploring the world of alternative ingredients in the ambition to have holistic whole food baking products come out of our oven. And yes, surrender is one of the big ingredients in that world.
Before we move off of flours, though, Casey, you've got some good tips about certain. You said, you know, you would cut the brown rice flour with something else, and I know that there are some that you say are better for savory baking and some that are better for sweet baking. So just a couple tips for those who are just getting started and experimenting. What would you recommend?
Yes,
sure. That's a great question. Well, I would say to bridge the road between the two, sweet and savory, I would go with sorghum. Sorghum is a great flour. It has kind of a mild taste. It's very slightly sweet, but it's pretty indistinguishable when it's in a baked good.
What's sorghum?
Sorghum is a whole grain that's been ground into flours. It's a cereal grain. It's somewhat like millet. Mm-hmm. And
it looks like corn when it's growing, only about 5 feet taller.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
and it's a great alternative flour to use. I would use also a portion of sorghum. So when I'm baking, maybe a little bit more sorghum than I would rice and then a little starch in there. That's a great kind of all-purpose baking.
The savory world.
Savory or sweet with the sorghum. It could really go between the two. And when you move into the savory world, things like chickpea flour are a really great alternative. Chickpea flour is a legume flour, and it's higher in protein, but it has a kind of a distinctive taste. Likewise with quinoa. Quinoa has kind of an assertive taste. It's also a higher protein. Quinoa is a great flour to use, but in smaller amounts. Things like teff flour. Teff is also really great. Teff has that reminiscent flavor of whole wheat that's really nice for bread baking, I find.
Can a gluten-free person use teff?
Yeah, teff is gluten-free.
Yeah, and actually, most people are familiar with teff because of injera, which is that spongy bread in Ethiopian cooking.
Oh, exactly.
And so there are some Ethiopian restaurants that will make an all-teff injera, and teff is gluten-free, but not all of the injera is teff because they want something to bind it, so they will sometimes cut it with wheat flour, so you can ask. But definitely, yeah, teff is completely gluten-free.
And Sita, you brought something up really important right there, is that gluten-free flours don't have gluten, which is the binder. It's an elastic protein that you find in wheat and barley and rye. And so when you're baking without it, you have to make certain substitutions and you have to play with your ratios and your ingredients to get that same effect.
Great. We want to hear about the alternatives to sugar, sweeteners, and fat coming up here on An Organic Conversation. When we come back, we'll take a very quick break, but we'll be right back with Chef Casey. Stay tuned.
Apple of my eye, don't know when and I don't know why. You're the only reason I keep on coming home. Sweet pea, what's all this about?
Don't get your way, all you can do is fuss and pout.
At Testa Epicures Guild, we provide tea and coffee from the regions of the world known to produce the finest of their kind. Always certified organic and fair trade, we stand for exceptional taste and highest quality. Every cup of our tea and coffee is connected to the soil and the people working the land. We have searched the world for the best ingredients and invite you to enjoy Testa tea and coffee. Find Desta at your natural food store or online at Desta.com. That is DESTA.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com. The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is flour, sugar, fat, holistic baking at its best, all the alternatives to white flour and sugar. And we are in a studio filled with baked treats for the 3-year anniversary of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Again, looking at a almost gone at this point, a hazelnut chocolate cake. And then we were just handed these little, what are those, Casey?
It's a date sweetened coconut flour cupcake.
Okay, we haven't eaten those yet. We haven't, like, so
speak
hold
for
on.
Yourself.
We'll do that. Okay, there we go.
One part of the room has not eaten them yet.
With us is Casey Caletti, Chef Casey, and that's chefcasey.com, the culinary curriculum manager at Bauman College, one of the leading culinary arts and nutrition institutions in the United States. And Casey, we were talking about the three main staples of kind of any baking, and of course holistic baking, alternative baking ingredients as well, flour, sugar, fat. We talked about flour and the alternatives. Do you grind your own grains ever? Does that have an effect on if you do it at home or not, or if that's more because you want the freshest?
You know, it is a really great way to ensure that you're getting the fresh, like best possible ingredients. You can grind your own nuts into almond meal, like we talked about earlier. You can do the same thing with grains. It does require a little bit of special equipment. So if you have a high-powered blender, there'll often be a dry canister attachment, and you can grind things from amaranth, which makes a nice flour, anything to quinoa or rice. Or
and of
millet.
Course, if you grind it the moment before you bake it, it does affect the flavor, right?
Yeah, it's going to have a nice good flavor. Fresh. You could also toast your grains before you grind them if you wanted that flavor.
Nice.
It's great for
really
savory.
Great.
Wow. Okay, so then we've covered flour. Now let's talk about sweeteners. And I think that that's one thing that people are really keen on giving up because of the effects of white sugar on the body. But it's also, I think, one of the trickier ones to replace because sugar is dry. And in the world of alternative sweeteners, you're not always necessarily going to get something that has the same texture. So what are the common health supportive sweeteners out there and how do they behave differently than sugar?
Well, sugar plays a really interesting role in baked goods. It doesn't just sweeten. It also acts as partially dry and partially liquid in terms of its ingredient profile. It also contributes to browning and several other important functions. So for people who are just starting out, I would recommend something like date sugar or maple sugar. You can find them at health food stores or order them online. And what it is just dehydrated. So ground dates that are dehydrated. And the crystals will replace one-to-one in terms of a sugar substitute. Mm.
And it behaves similar. It's just not highly processed white sugar.
Exactly. It does behave similarly. There is some fiber in there, fiber from the dates, so it will thicken your baked goods just a little bit. But the difference, you know, you can tweak it just a little bit here and there, but it's a pretty easy substitution one for one.
And what are the health benefits of using date sugar or maple sugar instead of white sugar?
Well, dates are full of minerals and vitamins. They're a great whole food. Like I said, they have good fiber content. Same thing with maple syrup. It also has a lot of good minerals. And another granulated sugar substitute would be palm sugar, which is made from the sap of a coconut palm. It's a great low glycemic sweetener. It has a little bit of a molasses-like flavor, which I adore. I use it in my frostings, and it gives them kind of a caramel flavor. Ooh. So that's another really great one that you can sub one-to-one.
And it doesn't spike your sugar, your blood sugar level up, and then you crash. It's a little bit more stable, right, all that.
Exactly. And these alternative sweeteners aren't going to spike your blood sugar the same. And then the ingredients that we were talking about before will also help slow it down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're more brave and you don't need to go with the maple syrup and the date sugar, what else do you use?
Honey is a great alternative. Honey has a myriad health benefits and it is pretty easy to substitute. Honey, like you know, is a liquid, so you're going to use slightly less. You might trim the liquid in your recipe by 3 tablespoons to 1/4 cup, and you might use about 2/3 of a cup of honey for 1 cup of white sugar that you're replacing. So you do a little bit of culinary math in there, but be brave. It's worth it, and honey imparts a great flavor. This hazelnut cake that I brought in today is sweetened with honey, and it's just that nice, light, kind of golden sweetness. It has... See, white sugar doesn't have too much of a flavor. It just has sweet. When you bring in these other sweeteners, you get a much more rounded profile. So honey is a great example of that. And maple syrup also has a nice round flavor profile, a little bit more depth, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Agave?
You know, I'm not a big fan of agave personally. Okay. You can substitute it. You trim down the liquid by about 1/4 cup and you'd use about 2/3 of a cup, maybe 3/4 of a cup of agave for 1 cup of sugar. Mm-hmm. But it's not in my arsenal of health supportive ingredients.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Do you have another thing up your sleeve in terms of sweeteners? What do you really love that is really unusual?
Well, I've been saving best for last.
Yes, I knew that.
I think using the whole foods is always the best approach. And for sweeteners, the whole food sweetener, it would be dates. Medjool dates are some of my favorites. They're nice and plump. They have that whole food package. They're going to have all the fiber, all the minerals, all the vitamins. They help stabilize your blood sugar. And
they're delicious, right? I mean,
they're delicious. The flavor is really, really spot on. And you can do a couple of different things when you're using dates. You can mash them up or blend them in a food processor and make like a date paste. You can also make a liquid sweetener out of dates. What I'll do often is do 1 cup of packed dates with 1 cup of water and blend it in a high-powered blender. And it's going to be about half as sweet as something like agave or maple syrup. But most of the time, I find that traditional recipes that call for white sugar are a little oversweetened anyhow. So,
I find the same thing.
Yeah. So oftentimes, you know, it's not just about using healthier sugars. It's also about using less.
And something that I love about dates, we did a What's in Season and Holistic Bite on dates at the Sense and Sensuality show back in, I don't know, the fall at some point. And dates also,
when they're fresh, yeah.
Yeah, you know exactly what that is. And dates are also high in tryptophan, right, Casey?
Yeah, dates are they're really nature's miracle.
And tryptophan...
Meaning what? They make you happy?
Yeah, well, tryptophan is a precursor to serotonin. Yes. Mm-hmm. So they do make you happy, and they also mellow you out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I always say it's such a great thing to put into baked goods if you're brilliant like Casey and know how to work with them, mm-hmm. because then when you can give it to somebody, particularly a child who's really craving something sweet, but it's not going to spike their blood sugar and make them hyperactive. It's actually going to give them a nice, happy, mellow feel.
Wow. And we want to hear about... fat, and also how you then combine all those ingredients, because as you said, in alternative ingredients, everything kind of works just a little bit different. You might not need as much fat, or you might need a little bit more sweetener, because dates, as you said, only have half the sweetening effect than white sugar. We want to hear that. But before that, we want to go back to rhubarb, and rhubarb will play another role right when we are finished with the next segment of the Holistic Bite. Here's our very own Sitarani Palomar, Chef Sita, with her weekly Holistic Bite.
I love that sound effect is sticking around, Helga. We talked about rhubarb a little bit as a vegetable. Yes, not a fruit the way most people think of it, but a vegetable that looks a little bit like celery, actually. And you can get it kind of in these pink and crimson colors. And it's the stem of the plant that you will cook with. And it is often paired with sweet fruits because it naturally has kind of a sour and astringent quality to it. But what that means is that it's also good for detoxifying the liver, which we've talked a lot about detox lately, too. So that makes it a perfect springtime vegetable. And rhubarb is also high in oxalic acid. So for people who have a difficult time, you know, breaking down oxalic acid, or if they're maybe producing calcium-based kidney stones, you might want to avoid rhubarb. But if you don't have any issue with that, then rhubarb is really rich in lutein, which is a carotenoid that's particularly good for your eye health, and also has a lot of antioxidants, and it's the red color that gives you that note that it's high in antioxidants, lycopene being one of the major ones. And it's great with fruit, like I said, good with strawberries and cherries, so people will use it to make compotes that they put over their ice cream and their pancakes, and I've had it with scones before, which is so delicious. You can use it to make a jam, and it's so perfect that we have Casey in the studio. I was at an event with Casey where she made this vanilla creme fraiche ice cream with a warm strawberry rhubarb compote over top that was just to die for. Everybody was just like coming back. They wanted seconds. It was so good. So Casey, being in the studio here, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you make that. How do you cook with rhubarb to make a strawberry rhubarb compote?
Well, rhubarb is one of those ingredients that the sweetness really comes out when you cook it. So I sort of stewed that rhubarb over the stovetop with the strawberries, and it kind of broke it down a little bit, relaxed some of those fibers that you were mentioning earlier, and really just brings out the sweet flavor.
And I love that you actually didn't cook it so that it was completely broken down. There were still little bits of the rhubarb. Mm-hmm. So you would get this sweet bite of strawberry and then a nice kind of like sour balancing bite of cooked rhubarb in that compote. Mm-hmm. Delicious.
Nice.
And did that just come to you, or did you... is because you're a fan of rhubarb, or because you just needed to make something for this event?
You know, I am a fan of rhubarb, and I think sometimes the ingredient just tells you how it wants to be prepared. You know, I know the technique of stewing fruits, and it just seemed like a really happy union, the strawberries and the rhubarb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Smiling rhubarb.
And we're all about happy rhubarb. Unions. Yes, that's the Holistic Bite with Chef Sita. Thank you, Sita.
Yes, my pleasure.
And as always, the Holistic Bite is brought to you by the natural beauty company Echo Bella. Here at An Organic Conversation, it is all about wonderful marriages and about possibility and interconnectedness and beauty. And when it comes to clean, natural and organic skincare and intelligent cosmetics, it's really difficult to find products that are truly made without compromises and are still affordable. That's why we love Echo Bella. It's all about saving the planet and protecting the animals in their company's mission. Check it out. Visit their website, ecobella.com. Let us know what you think, ecobella.com. And there's a special about ordering right now for the holidays. So again, check that out. The website is ecobella.com. With us in the studio is Casey Caletti, Chef Casey, the Culinary Curriculum Manager at Bauman College. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we are spending an hour on alternative ingredients and holistic baking. Casey, with all the alternative ingredients that you use, what's your favorite combo?
One of my favorite combos is to bake with pumpkin and some of the warming spices. Cinnamon is really good for balancing blood sugar. Ginger is really anti-inflammatory. And speaking of baking as home and bringing up those warm memories for people, I think that that's a really winning combo. Also pairs really well with the sweetness of dates and the flavor of maple syrup. Can't go wrong.
Which brings up the last category. We talked about flour extensively and sweeteners, and sweeteners may be one of the most important pieces of how to make it attractive and you know, like a sweet treat. What about fat? What alternatives do you have for the classic, I guess, what's the classic in baking? Butter.
Lard.
Butter, lard.
Yeah, Mark bakes a lot with lard. It's great.
There are a number of different types of fats in baking. There are saturated and unsaturated fats. And so in terms of your saturated fats, coconut oil is a great alternative. It has a flavor, so you have to, you know, be mindful of what you're baking with, using it for. And it also has kind of a floral characteristic that's really nice. It can be a little bit more technically challenging in certain applications when you're creaming. So if you're creaming butter and sugar for cookies, if you try and substitute coconut oil, it's not impossible. It's totally doable, but it takes a little bit of practice.
And sometimes actually a little intense. I had cookies that were done with coconut oil, and wow, it was a coconut cookie.
You have to claim the coconut.
Yeah.
You have to go with the coconut.
Claim the coconut.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that butter is bad for you, right? It's not like you necessarily feel the need to replace butter, is it?
No, actually, butter was next on my list. Really good quality grass-fed, organic, pastured butter is a great ingredient in baking. It provides a nice crisp, nice browning. It behaves really well in things like pie crust. The same thing, actually, with lard. If you get really good quality, you can use lard in a lot of your baked goods if you have a dairy intolerance.
Well, you know,
I thought you were kidding, Mark.
No, wow. I was just... A lot of pie makers will say that their best crust comes with using lard.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
If you don't want to go the animal route for our vegan fans, how about like olive oil or, like, you know, what alternatives are there if you don't want to do animals other than coconut?
Well, olive oil is a tricky one. I personally buy a very unrefined, cold-pressed version of olive oil that I don't want to heat it. I think it really showcases its flavor and its complexity when it's left cold. So I'll use olive oil in salad dressings, but I don't often bake with it. And if you were going to, maybe if you had a Mediterranean style, like a polenta cake or something like that, I would just keep your temperature lower. About 325 would be the max. But if you're vegan and you're looking to bake, there are a lot of good liquid oils that you can use. One of my favorites is actually tea seed oil, which not a lot of people are familiar with, but I think they should be. It's high in monounsaturated fats, so the same fats that you might find in olive oil.
Tea seed. Wow.
It's actually from the tea plant. And the Republic of Tea is a brand that makes a good kind. They sell it at the Berkeley Bowl Marketplace. You can order it online. And it's has a very, very mild flavor, and it's a safe high heat oil, so it's great for baking.
I wish we had 2 hours today, but we don't. We're almost out of time.
So let's just go to the quick here. So is it just me, or are all baked goods better with a little produce added to it?
I totally agree. My favorite combination is baking with pumpkin. Bananas are a great addition to your baked goods. Zucchini bread, zucchini cake, dates. Dates are wonderful for baking with. There are a lot of great ways to sneak vegetables and things like that, especially when you're trying to moisten and bind gluten-free baked goods because you've got
even
all the
onions,
fiber.
Right? I mean, you can cook with
like focaccia.
Bake with onions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nothing like good caramelized onions snuck into a bread.
And especially the balance between like savory and tart and or sweet and savory in one, you know, in one piece of whatever it may be, muffin.
Mm-hmm. Roasted garlic is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Casey, you're working on a cookbook, right? That's kind of featuring these specific ingredients.
When is that coming out?
The cookbook date's to be determined, but I'm doing a lot of recipe testing and I'm posting all my recipes and process on my blog. So you can check that out if you go to my website. And the cookbook is all gluten-free and date sweetened.
That's Chef Casey for you guys out there. ChefCasey.com. Follow her. Check out the website or go to An Organic Conversation. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation. Wonderful. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank
that
you.
Was a
so
packed
great.
Hour.
So yummy, yeah. too. Yes. Thank you, Casey.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Production assistant, Lauren Mulcahy.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit us on iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And we are your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Thanks. Bye.
She's the kind of girl who's not too shy, and I can tell I'm her kind of guy. She bends close to me like I hope she would.
She bends to me like I hope she would.
So